For brand new students that are joining us just now, we are in the process of looking at some of the transition events between the Old and the New Testaments of our Bibles. And we are currently looking at events that happened in 64 BC. This is a crisis moment in the developing relationship between the Romans and the Jews. For the last 100 years, that is, since the time of Judas Maccabee, there has been this pact, this treaty of mutual assistance between the Roman Republic and the Jewish Hasmonean Kingdom. In a nutshell, it says that if either entity is under attack, the other side has to come to their defense and cannot provide any type of assistance to the side that's attacking the treaty member, the ally that they have made this arrangement with. Now, that became a sticky point right around 64 BC, because two brothers of the Hasmonean Kingdom have been going back and forth in which one of them is the legitimate heir to the throne. This has happened since the death of their father and the subsequent death of their mother in the early 60s. And so in 64, both brothers are still trying to assert their right to be the king. The eldest brother, Hyrcanus, is being pushed to defend his right as the firstborn by his friend Antipater the Idumean. And the reason that's important is because Antipater has a little son named Herod that is going to play heavily in our early gospel story. But he's also being supported, Hyrcanus, by King Aretas of Arabia. The younger brother, Aristobulus, who really, really wants to be king, has barricaded himself in the temple during Passover time of 64. And both parties now have sent an appeal to the Romans, who are operating militarily just to the north of Judea, and asking Pompey the Great, very famous Roman character, to listen to both sides and make a determination as to which of them is the true ally of the Roman people. Now, instead of coming and taking care of it himself immediately, Pompey is represented by his son-in-law, a man by the name of Scaurus, who goes to Jerusalem, and he makes the determination, and according to Josephus, whose histories we're using here, it's based simply on the fact that Aristobulus is the one that's barricaded in Jerusalem, and he's defending himself against an attack from the outside by Hyrcanus, Antipater, and Aretas. So he makes a determination that Aristobulus is probably to be considered the heir to the throne and therefore Rome's ally. And immediately, Scaurus tells Aretas to withdraw his forces, get out of the region, because he's not even Jewish. And so Aretas leaves, rather than face reprisals from the Romans, because he's already having difficulties along that line, as we will see later. Now, that did not resolve the issue, though, because as soon as Aretas is out of the picture, Aristobulus believes that he can now assert his domination over his brother. And so, using his forces and perhaps although we don't know for sure, some Roman reinforcements lent to him by Scaurus. He defeats some of the remaining besiegement forces and ends up killing the brother of Antipater the Idumean in the process. Now, you know that's not going to go over well. But what happens next is that Hyrcanus reaches out to Pompey again and says that Scaurus blew the arbitration, did not look at both sides. And so he wants a higher rank Roman to make the determination on this. And of course, Aristobulus follows suit by demanding that Pompey uphold Scaurus's decision already made. So Pompey agrees that he will come to Damascus and listen to both sides the next spring. So we're talking about a year later. And the reason for this is because he wants to take care of some other Roman military matters before that happens. So in spring of 63, which is a watershed year, keep it in your head. In 63 BC, Pompey, who is 42 years of age, just to get a sense as to where this guy is at, listens to both sides at Damascus. And this is the summary of the petitions. Hyrcanus claimed that he had the right to rule because he was the firstborn. He accused Aristobulus of not only declaring himself king by force, but by being an aggressor in neighboring regions around the Jewish kingdom. And that included having had some sort of connection with the Mediterranean grain ship pirates, which Pompey had just recently defeated. So you can kind of feel what's going on here. Hyrcanus is trying to make Pompey see his brother Aristobulus as trouble for Rome, because grain pirates were always a problem. So Hyrcanus was supported in his claim by over 1,000 Jewish nobles who had been gathered along to this meeting by his friend Antipater the Idumean. On the opposite side, Aristobulus claimed the right based on the fact that his brother was just a weak leader, and he felt that he had to declare himself king, which was a title that had belonged to his father before him, lest someone else come in and seize control from his brother. So he claims, I was just trying to defend the Hasmonean kingdom from my weak-kneed brother. Aristobulus was supported by many of the younger members of Jewish high society. They liked him better than Hyrcanus. Now, there was a third group of petitioners that came to Pompey at this time. They wanted to return to legitimate priestly oversight of the Jewish people, since the two brothers seemed to only be interested in enslaving the Jewish people for their own purposes. This group more than likely were Sadducees, because the Sadducees got their start by declaring that Judas Maccabee and his brothers, and then his brothers' sons and grandsons, were not legitimate members of the priestly line, that they should have descended from Zadok, which is where the name Sadducee comes from. And so these guys want a Sadducee high priest. All right, so what happens? Pompey listens and then promises that he will decide the matter after he's settled some more issues between the Roman Republic and specifically the Nabatean kingdom of Eratos III. However, shortly after he made that promise and had left, Aristobulus' consent continued to present himself as the rightful king. And so Pompey was forced to divert his entire army to Jerusalem, where he eventually took Aristobulus into custody. So he arrested him under the directives of the treaty between the Romans and the Jews. And that is, anyone who acts as an enemy of the Jewish people is acting as an enemy of the Roman people. So he arrests Aristobulus. Aristobulus's supporters rebarricade themselves in the temple, and they physically cut access points from the outside in. Now, the remainder of the Jewish people at Jerusalem welcomed Pompey's army into the city. I want to emphasize that Josephus is telling this history from a Jewish perspective. And according to him, this was not a Roman invasion of Jerusalem or of Judea. And I emphasize that because there's a whole bunch of Christian teachers and preachers that are almost always presenting this idea that the Romans invaded Judea in AD 63 as aggressors, and that is most certainly not the case. They were invited in as arbiters of this civil war going on between the two brothers. So the remainder of the Jews welcomed Pompey's army into the city. Pompey's army used Jewish tradition that Jews don't engage in any type of activity, even in warfare, on the Sabbath, except for self-defense. You might remember that from the days of Mattathias, Judas Maccabee's dad. So he chose not to attack the Jewish people on those Sabbath days, but rather to build up siege ramps against the temple on Sabbath days. And so after several Sabbaths, he was eventually able to break through the walls of the temple and into the area where Aristobulus's men were located. This happened in the third month of that particular year, when there is a fast day that is not clearly specified. Commentators are guessing that it might have been the 23rd day of the third month, which was supposed to be the day on which Jeroboam broke away from the southern kingdom way back in ancient times. Don't know that to be the case, but anyway, that's the idea. But there was a fast day on that day. Pompey breached through the walls. His soldiers basically allowed Jews that were supporting Hyrcanus to flood through that breach, and 12,000 pro-Aristobulus Jews died that day. The city now comes under the military protection of the Romans. And this is what Josephus says about the event. This is coming from Antiquities, Book 14, Chapter 4. No small enormities were committed about the temple itself, which in former ages had been inaccessible and seen by none, meaning nobody but Jewish priests in the inner courtyards. For Pompey went into it, and not a few of those that were with him also, and saw all that which is unlawful for any other man to see, but only for the high priests. And so what Josephus is reporting is that Gentiles, Pompey chief among them, were walking around inside the shrine area, inside the temple building itself, and saw things that Gentiles should never have seen. Even Jewish people, most of them, had never seen these things in person. And here's his annotation of those things. There were in the temple the golden table, the holy candlestick, lampstand actually, and the pouring vessels, and a great quantity of spices. And besides these, there was among the treasures 2,000 talents of sacred money. Each talent represents about 6,000 days' wages. So you can appreciate we're talking about millions of dollars worth of gold and silver, probably. Yet did Pompey touch nothing of all this on account of his regard to religion. And in this point also, he acted in a manner that was worthy of his virtue. Now, that's a Jewish historian reporting that. And he has no love for Pompey. You can tell that in some of his other passages. But he wants to make it clear that Pompey was acting appropriately other than being in the temple where Jewish people didn't want him. The next day, he gave order to those that had the charge of the temple to cleanse it and to bring what offerings the law required to God, and restored the high priesthood to Hyrcanus, both because he had been useful to him in other respects and because he hindered the Jews in the country from giving Aristobulus any assistance in his war against him. So Hyrcanus is now supported by the Roman Republic in the form, in the personage of General Pompey as the authentic and appropriate leader of the Jews. So the arbitration has now been settled as far as the Jews are concerned, or excuse me, as far as the Romans are concerned about the Jews. He made Jerusalem tributary to the Romans and took away those cities of Celesyria, which the inhabitants of Judea had subdued, and put them under the government of the Roman president, and confined the whole nation, which had elevated itself so high before, within its own bounds. Now, this needs to be explained. The whole situation has not been fully resolved yet, because Aristobulus still has supporters out there. So there's also been war that's gone on, fighting that's gone on. And when that happens, the Romans always force the losing side to pay reparations. So this is what it's talked about. And he said he made them tributary to the Romans. The Jews now owe the Romans money for the things done against the Romans as they were trying to arbitrate this whole situation. But he also makes the Jews surrender some of the territory that they took from non-Jews during this time period in question. And then he puts those areas under Roman control. And then he puts his son-in-law, Scaurus, as the prefect, shall we say, over all of this area, including the Jewish area, to make sure that everything is followed according to these decrees. Now, Josephus makes it very clear who he thinks is at fault in the midst of all this. I want you to listen to this passage that comes next in the book of Antiquities. Now, the occasions of this misery which came upon Jerusalem were Hyrcanus and Aristobulus by raising a sedition one against the other. So he blames the two brothers for the country of Judea and the city of Jerusalem having all this stuff happen to it, including being made tributary to the Romans during this period. Continuing, "For now we lost our liberty and became subject to the Romans, and were deprived of that country which we had gained by our arms from the Syrians, and were compelled to restore it to the Syrians." So Josephus was complaining that some of the expansion of the Hasmonean kingdom had been lost because of this infighting which the Romans are trying to resolve. Continuing, "Moreover, the Romans exacted of us in a little time above 10,000 talents, so millions of dollars of reparations, and the royal authority, which was a dignity formerly bestowed on those that were high priests by the right of their family and became the property of private men, but of these matters we shall treat in their proper places." Josephus, who was related to this family tree of the Hasmoneans, complains that the Hasmoneans eventually lose their hold on the throne of Judea, of the Jews. They lose it to non-Hasmoneans, specifically Herod the Great, which he's going to talk about later. So he blames all of this on his distant relatives, bringing the Romans in at this time and setting up the stage for them to designate a non-Hasmonean, Herod the Great, as king of the Jews. Back to his passage. Now, Pompey committed Calicyria, or Celesyria. Cela means hollow, and Syria, of course, is the region north of Judea and north of the Promised Land. So it's the center area of Syria between Syria proper in the north and Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and all that down in the south. So we would think Lebanon and southern Syria as being Celesyria. As far as the river Euphrates and Egypt to Scaurus with two Roman legions, so two Roman legions under Scaurus, and they went away, then he, meaning Pompey, went away to Cilicia, that's where Paul of Tarsus is from, and he made haste to Rome. He also carried bound along with him Aristobulus and his children, for he had two daughters and as many sons. So the prisoner, the guy who is now an enemy of Rome because he was fighting against the legitimate ally of Rome, he's taken away to Rome and made a political prisoner there, along with his sons and his daughters. Now, Josephus reports at this point something that becomes important in a bit. It says, one of the sons, ran away, named Alexander. But the younger, Antigonus, was carried to Rome together with his sisters. And so then things kind of settled down a little bit in 63, down through the 50s, because now we've got this intertwining between things that are happening in the Roman Republic as it's declining and getting ready to morph into the Roman Empire. And it's all intertwined with things going on among the Jews in Judea, where Hyrcanus is high priest and ethnarch of the Jewish people. But because of the recent unpleasantness, they are having to take orders from the Roman Scaurus, who is functioning as the overseer of things in the lower Middle East. Now, in the year 59, all the way through the year 53, we know in history of something called the First Triumvirate of Rome, where three people of great political power share the leadership of Rome. These three were Julius Caesar, Pompey the Great, and another man by the name of Crassus. Now, while they were functioning in that way, the son of Aristobulus, the Jewish prisoner in Rome, Alexander, who had escaped a few years earlier, he gets together an army. He invades Judea, and he throws Hyrcanus off his leadership post as high priest and ethnarch of the Jews. Alexander then starts rebuilding those walls around the Jewish temple area that Pompey had broken through. That's all happening in 58. The following year, in 57, when Pompey finds out that the things that he'd been taking care of in Judea are now being reversed by that escaped son Alexander, he dispatches a man named Gabinius to deal with this problem. Now, historic of historic interest to us, one of the Roman soldiers who will distinguish himself in these battles against Alexander was a young man named Marcus Antonius, or as we know him better, Mark Anthony. And so he starts rising in prominence in wars going on in Judea. Now, Alexander's mother, who was still in Judea, she sided with the Romans in their actions against her son because she knew she had her husband and her kids being held as political hostages in Rome. And so Alexander eventually, because of his mom, makes a deal with Gabinius, and he gives up his hold on Jerusalem in exchange for maintaining his freedom. And this is how Josephus says this first fight of Alexander is resolved. It says, Gabinius brought Hyrcanus to Jerusalem, so brings him back basically, and committed the care of the temple to him. And when he had ordained five councils, he distributed the nation into the same number of parts. And so these councils governed the people. The first council was at Jerusalem, the second at Gadara, that's southeast of the Sea of Galilee, the third at Amanthus, which is east of the Jordan, and the fourth at Jericho, and the fifth at Sepphoris, which is just a few miles north of Nazareth in Galilee. And so the Jews were freed from monarchic authority and were governed by an aristocracy. So what we find out here is that now the Romans are trying to phase back in the idea that Hyrcanus is going to be the high priest, and then there are going to be councils, like the Sanhedrin at Jerusalem. There will be councils all over Jewish territory, and each of these councils will be led by aristocrats in the Jewish populace, and that this is how the country will be governed in the future.